You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And not everything I'm going to talk about today is illegal, but everything that I'm going to talk about today is bad for regular Americans.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. I'm a data wonk.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I talk about food a lot on the show. It's a thing. I am a foodie.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are joined this first half hour of the 3 o'clock hour by one of our great friends with the Center for American Progress Action Fund, here to talk with us about Social Security, is their senior fellow who thinks a lot about labor equity, you know, things like paid leave, which we should have a whole lot more of. We could probably spend about 2 hours talking about just paid family leave with our next guest, but we're going to focus on Social Security. Her name is Molly Weston Williamson. She also is a lawyer, Yale law graduate. We could talk about Yale right now, too, given everything. So much going on, Molly, but especially a poignant discussion about Social Security today as the Dow Jones is down 2.5 points as markets again roiling as Donald Trump doubles, triples, quadruples down on attacking the independence of the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell, as people are looking at their 401ks with increasing trepidation, makes our conversation about preserving Social Security and what's going on in the Trump administration's draconian cuts there too, all the more important. Welcome, Molly. Thank you for making time.
Thank you for having me.
So the Trump administration has put the Social Security Administration on the list of sort of Doge-style chainsaw cuts. That is not immune, despite Trump's statements, oh, I'm never going to cut Social Security, we're never doing any of those things. Donald Trump can never introduce a piece of legislation to curb a Social Security benefit, but he can damn sure break the administration of said benefits, right? Is that what's going on, Molly? Is that really the headline here?
That's exactly right. So I think the thing to know is we know that he's cutting Social Security because he's cutting the Social Security Administration. And when you cut the agency, you are cutting benefits. You're putting the Trump administration and Elon Musk and Doge between you and your Social Security benefits, between your grandma and her Social Security benefits, between you and the benefits that you've earned and that you're entitled to count on.
Yeah, I think that this is what we have to focus on. And I've been trying my best in what I talk about to not just focus on the words that they say, though it's important to listen to that too. But Donald Trump has said a few times, I'm not going to cut Social Security. He's also said that he's open to cutting entitlements, and Social Security is an entitlement. So the man lies all the time. Who knows what he actually thinks? But he's doing everything to make it incredibly hard, and if not difficult or impossible, for people to continue to interact with the government department that sends them their checks or makes their deposits. Can you tell us about what those cuts are and how they're impacting whether and how people get their earned, promised, and worked for Social Security benefits?
So what we're seeing right now is they've set a target of cutting 7,000 jobs in the Social Security Administration, and that's in an agency that's already at a 50-year staffing low. Even though there's a lot more people who are retiring and counting on Social Security than there were 50 years ago. So Social Security didn't have 7,000 jobs to spare. It didn't have 7 jobs to spare. So they're cutting staff, they're cutting regional offices, they're threatening to cut field offices, and they're cutting back on services. So we've had this hokey pokey about exactly what cuts to phone service they're making, where they change their tune day to day. But what we know is it's a lot harder to get somebody on the phone than it was a couple of months ago. People are waiting hours and hours to talk to a human being. They're finding it harder to use the phone, or they're prevented from using the phone to do even basic stuff like updating your bank account information. And when you can't get through by phone, it pushes people to go to the offices in person, except the offices are understaffed. You can't get in if you don't have an appointment. So that pushes people to the website, except the website keeps crashing. And so what all of this is adding up to is, if you can't get to a person, if you can't get to the system to update your information, to make a new claim, because there are new people who need disability benefits or are retiring every day, that's making it harder and harder day by day to get to those benefits, to make sure that those benefits that you have earned, that you're counting on, are going to show up for you. And that's happening right now, not in the future, right now.
So again, this is pay attention to what they're doing, and what they're doing is breaking the government department and the processing systems that enable people to get their benefits, to update their benefits, to apply for benefits. You break the process, you break the system that provides it, and guess what? The benefit ultimately would go away by effect anyways, right? Like, that's what is happening here. And I wanted to put together that logic tree again for people, Molly. You slash the number of employees, which means fewer people able to answer phones, fewer people to staff regional and field offices, fewer people to update the systems and operate the online systems. So you can't get through on the phones. You can't go to the same field offices because those are closed. You can't get through on the website because that's crashing because it's not getting updated. It's a frightening set of circumstances right here. And one in five Americans rely on Social Security. Can you tell us specifically about some of the cuts here in Wisconsin and what people can do if they are concerned about having to apply for new benefits or making changes? Do you have some tips, Molly, for how people can navigate the system given these cuts?
Sure. And in Wisconsin, it's actually closer to one in four people are counting on Social Security. There's about 1.4 million people counting on Social Security in Wisconsin. So that's your friends, that's your neighbors, that's somebody down the street. Everybody loves somebody who counts on Social Security. And so I think right now what we're seeing is, be ready for wait times, be ready to have to try multiple methods to get to what you need, be prepared to have to go in person or to make an appointment, to have things take longer than you were expecting them to. And I think at the same time, I think being really vigilant about what's coming next. Are there worse cuts coming? You know, we're hearing the president keeps talking about fraud in Social Security, even though we know fraud is vanishingly rare. Elon Musk keeps calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme, which is what people who don't like Social Security have said for decades and decades, and it's never, ever been true. So being ready for, are there bigger cuts coming?
Yeah.
Being ready for, is my field office that I need going to close? Is somebody going to be there to answer the phone? And being prepared to really try to protect your Social Security, which you should be able to count on just working.
Correct.
You should be able to count on, it's just there and you don't have to think about it.
It's remarkable to me that at the same time, they're going to make it so much more difficult, if not impossible, for some people to obtain their benefits. Because When I talk with my family who are older, phone and in person is by far the preferred way because they have a harder time interacting with technology and navigating it, especially when there's problems. You make that super hard. At the very same time they're doing this, you look at the IRS and it's like, oh yeah, let's shut down that free, easy way for people to interact with the Internal Revenue Service to get their refunds sooner. Oh yeah, by the way, there's a whole bunch of private companies that do that. It's just, it seems very fig leaf at best. And yet we constantly hear these attacks on Social Security, these lies. Oh, they're paying people 150 years old. Why? Right? Over and over again. I wanted Molly to play for you and our listeners a clip of Ronald Reagan talking about Social Security back in the day. Elon Musk calls Social Security a Ponzi scheme. Let's see what did Ronald Reagan, the greatest Republican of all time, according to many, what did he have to say about Social Security? Let's take a listen.
Social Security, let's lay it to rest once and for all. I told you never would I do such a thing. But I tell you also now, Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. Social Security is totally funded by the payroll tax levied on employer and employee. If you reduce the outgo of Social Security, that money would not go into the general fund to reduce a deficit. It would go into the Social Security Trust Fund. So Social Security has nothing to do with balancing a budget or erasing or lowering the deficit.
Big facts from Ron Reagan. Molly, can you just generally address some of these attacks on the Social Security system and on funding concerns more broadly?
So what we know about Social Security is that it works. That the system of we all pay in a little bit out of every paycheck, and that pays for the benefits we need when we retire, the benefits we need in disability. We're all supporting and taking care of one another in the way that we were taught to do in kindergarten. Social Security has been working for almost 100 years. People have built lives and livelihoods on that promise. And a big part of why we know that works is we know this to work. There are places where it deserves more support. There are places where Social Security deserves more support to make sure that the structures are set up in the way that we're keeping pace with what people really need. But big picture, we know that Social Security works. We know that Social Security is reliable. It's a thing you can count on. It's going to keep being something you can count on in the future. And when we hear folks who keep trotting out the same old stories that we know aren't true about why it doesn't work, we should ask why. And we should ask why they're saying that and what they're looking for.
Yeah, so important. Where are the incentives? What are the motivations that can often lead you to the more important truths about things? Folks, my guest in this first segment of our 3 o'clock hour, her name is Molly Weston Williamson. She's a senior fellow focused on labor policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Molly, last question to you as we close out this segment. What should people do if they are concerned about these cuts and think they are a bad idea?
It's time to get loud. It's time to get loud about what Social Security means to American families, about the very real risk that when these cuts pile up, those checks are not going to go out, that we're going to have an unprecedented system failure. It's time to get loud with representatives. It's time to really make sure folks understand what Social Security means and that collectively we can't afford to break it because we need it to go.
Folks, Molly Weston Williamson of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Hands off our Social Security. No more cuts to the staff or field offices or regional offices. That's a bad idea. Our fine program continues when we come back. Is Pete Hegseth out? Breaking news. Who knew? A consequence for incompetence out of the Trump administration. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. It is Monday here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Warming up to a Wednesday lineup change here on the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. From 6 to 9, starting on Wednesday, you're going to be able to hear Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News, followed by Matt Nair on air, my fabulous colleague, Jane Matt Nair and Greg Bach, hosting that fun take on politics each weekday from 9 to 11. From 11 to 2, you'll find Tom Hartman making us all a little bit smarter and more compassionate every day. Todd Alba, seeking truth wherever it leads from 2 to 4, this fine slot. And then I will be in your drive time with you on your evening commute from 4 to 6 p.m. across the Civic Media Talk Radio Network. I hope you come with us, with me, to continue these great discussions, so very important. Today, I just want to plug this again, folks. Today, I did not get to Justice Alito's dissent in the, what I'm going to call, 1 a.m. Hail Mary Supreme Court intervention to actually require the Trump administration to follow our Constitution. I'm going to dissect his dissent. dissect his dissent tomorrow on the air. And I'm going to tell you what Justice Alito has in common with the liberal bloc, at least in the over this past weekend, with the liberal bloc on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. You're not going to want to miss that coverage. I'm going to be kicking that off right at the top of the show tomorrow, still at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Wednesday is when I begin at 4 p.m. Be sure that you are marking your calendars and not going to miss that. But let's talk about Pete Hegseth. NPR reporting just minutes ago that the White House has begun a search for a new Secretary of Defense. Again, this is according to NPR. You think? I mean, seriously, the guy with drunken impulse control problems, a litany of problems in workplaces, bankrupted not one but two nonprofits, a credible sexual assault allegation. Oh, wait, I'm not talking about our president. I'm just talking about our Secretary of Defense. My bad. Did you get confused there about which dirtbag I might have been talking about? I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so glib. I was so shocked this weekend, right? It was like a series of shocks. I don't know about all of you, but it was a series of shocks. First, the Supreme Court having to intervene because breaking news that Donald Trump putting migrants subject to the Supreme Court order on buses to deport, even though the order says they get due process. That intervention going into Saturday morning, then the unbelievable Signalgate 2.0 occurring. You got the Wisconsin Supreme Court decision on the Evers. I don't even know what to call it. The 400-year veto. I'll cover it tomorrow. That broke. Then it was Easter. You got Vance talking to the Pope. The Pope then basically getting in front of, 8 billion Catholics worldwide and saying what J.D. Vance and Donald Trump stands for is garbage. And then the Pope dies. What else could have possibly happened this weekend? Also, Marco Rubio, just the Thursday night into Friday, saying basically like, oh, I know Donald Trump promised to have that whole Ukraine peace Russia thing sorted out, but that might not happen. We might not get there. So just a couple things, but let's talk about the Pete Hegseth Signalgate 2.0, because this is so ridiculous. This is so ridiculous. And the whys behind this, one can only hazard a guess, and I think there's only one guess that has even a small chance of being accurate. So let's level set. What happened this weekend? Well, turns out at the same time, Pete Hegseth and Mike Walls and a bunch of other, Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance, were all on a unsecured Signal chat talking about military strikes against the Houthis in Yemen on one Signal chat. He was also on a Signal chat with his Fox contributor wife, his personal lawyer, who also is magically employed by the Pentagon. Weird. Just became employed by the Pentagon. And his bro on a different Signal chat, also being like, guys, I'm so important. I just ordered the military to strike the Houthis in Yemen. Check out my war plans. Both Signal chats at the same time. And by the way, the timing here is key. The strikes against the Houthis in Yemen were the United States' single largest military effort since Donald Trump took office. So this was the first time that Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, let's grab a few beers after work, got to send in the big bomb somewhere. So you think he might have been bragging to his wife and his lawyer and his bro? I mean, huh? First big strike, that's who he's talking to about this on Signal, two separate channels. Yes, the one you heard about before with the reporter on it. Oops-a-daisy. And now also his wife, his bro, and his lawyer who magically got hired by the Pentagon, just a little while ago. personal lawyer. His wife, his Fox contributor wife, his wife, his personal lawyer, and his brother have absolutely no reasons to see the timing of the Air Force strikes against Houthis. They had no need to see that information. They weren't approved to see it. This guy's judgment could not be worse. Could not be worse. 855-752-4842. I want to get your impressions about this. Do you think Hegseth should probably resign? Why do you think he's on the Signal apps? And keep this in the back of your head. Pete Hegseth was specifically briefed by security experts on his staff and told in the weeks leading up to the strikes against the Houthis in Yemen to not use Signal, that Signal had been compromised, that the Chinese or other adversarial enemy state actors could probably access your Signal chats. And he did it anyways. Oh, here's the other thing. Signalgate 2.0 on his personal phone. Not his super duper encrypted secure government phone, nor using the $1 billion plus government communications network that we created for such communications. We discuss why. Why do you think he was doing this? And the implications, is he actually going to get fired? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Are we safe enough with such an incompetent Secretary of Defense? We discuss next. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where it's always better when we stand together for things like competence and national security. We're discussing Pete Hegseth's meltdown, Pete Hegseth's inability to follow simple instructions like don't use your personal cell phone to communicate military airstrike timings. In the hours before said airstrikes are to occur, you could kill pilots. You could kill American soldiers. That's bad. He was told this and yet used his personal phone and a messaging application called Signal to brag. It's the only possible justification that I can think of to his Fox contributor wife, his personal lawyer, and his bro, his literal bro. Like, hey, I'm the big man on campus. We're about to bomb them Houthis. I'm shocked by it. And here's the other thing. In true Trumpian fashion, everyone else gets blamed for Pete Hegseth's complete and utter total incompetence and failure to follow the most basic instructions from knowledgeable actual expert staff that told him in the weeks leading up to the strike against the Houthis to not use Signal and don't use your personal phone to talk about these things. Did it anyways, because Pete Hegseth, I don't know, fill in the blanks. Maybe we'll have a little episode of Mad Libs. That's a new segment. Pete Hegseth is blank. Adverb, right? Call in with your Mad Libs on Pete Hegseth, 855-752-4842. NPR reporting. Hegseth used the Signal messaging app on his personal smartphone, detailing minute-by-minute classified information about airstrikes on Houthi targets in Yemen. It happened at about the same time in March that Hegseth shared similar details with top White House officials in a different Signal chat group that accidentally included a journalist. That leak, hours before airstrikes hit, could have endangered U.S. pilots if that information about the timing of strikes was intercepted by U.S. adversaries. You don't say. And by the way, U.S. adversaries like China, Iran, North Korea, Russia, etc., can break the encryption on things like Signal. That's why the U.S. military and the Department of Defense spent billions to create a messaging platform that is only used by government officials with top secret clearances to communicate, you know, airstrike timing. Why aren't you using that? Well, two reasons. One, it's ego and he wants to brag, and you probably don't want you bragging and, you know, giving yourself a congratulatory slap on your own back, like, ooh, I'm the big man. You probably don't want that on the government communication system, because that's subject to open records and FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act. So why would you be using these channels on your personal phone to brag and to communicate information to people that you shouldn't be doing that with, and you don't want the open record, the public record that is subject to requests and record-keeping obligation under the National Archives laws, et cetera, et cetera? It's not like you can put in a FOIA request to be like, hey, give me all our military plans. But you're required to retain those, and eventually they do become discoverable under FOIA. The response from the Trump administration to both Signalgate 1 and Signalgate 2 has been to what? Blame everybody else. The acting inspector general for the Department of Defense undertook an investigation. That investigation reportedly also leading up and into the weekend led to the resignations of three top officials within the Department of Defense, including his deputy chief of staff. Excuse me, the assistant to his deputy chief of staff. The reports are more people are considering resigning if Pete Hegseth sticks around. This is probably why they're looking to replace him. You can't literally have every person in leadership leave an organization and hope it survives. That usually doesn't work. And by the way, the people that resigned, it's clear from the circumstances that they were being blamed for the accurate information about Pete Hegseth's use of Signal getting out to the mass media. They're clearly taking the fall for that. This includes, these are two senior advisors, Dan Caldwell and Darren Selnick. They were accused of the leak. This is also another former Defense Department official, John Uliott, who left last week again. He then said in a piece that came out in Politico this weekend that the Pentagon is, quote, in disarray under Hegseth's leadership and suggested that Mr. Trump remove him. These are people that, like, got past the Trump vet to continue to work in Pete Hegseth's Department of Defense. You see what I'm saying? Like, these aren't some, you know, the swamp, the shadow liberal. And so what have they done for the past 2 days? Caroline Leavitt, Donald Trump, Pete Hegseth. They just blame these other people for his incompetence. Like, they wouldn't have anything to leak if they did leak, if you just did what everyone told you to do and not use your personal phone and not use the Signal app. How is your incompetence someone else's fault? Which brings me to, what does Pete Hegseth and Harvard have in common? Because you never thought you'd hear those two words together in the same sentence. Here's what they have in common. The Trump administration apparently accidentally sent the threat letter to Harvard last week. Not last week, the week before last. On Friday at 1 o'clock in the morning. Apparently 1 a.m. is when everything is happening. It wasn't supposed to go out. The one that said to Harvard, basically, we're going to take over management of your university and tell you who you can admit, what faculty get tenure. You're going to litmus test people now. And Harvard, this past Monday, a week ago today, said no thank you to the Trump administration. You remember this? And then they say, oh, we're going to yank your tax exempt status, your $2.2 billion in federal grants. They all go away. It's the only time anybody's been sympathetic to Harvard. Oh, I want Harvard to win. No one's ever said that until now. They're like, yes, you should beat the Trump administration. Their response to their own screw up, oh, we shouldn't have sent the letter to Harvard, to blame Harvard for taking the threat letter seriously. You can't make this crap up. All right, I just want to compare this, these two statements, because it's pretty hilarious. Here's Pete Hegseth blaming other people for his incompetence, okay? This is Pete Hegseth today. This is what the media does. They take anonymous sources from disgruntled former employees, and then they try to slash and burn people, ruin their reputation. It's not going to work with me. No, Pete, you do a fine job of ruining your reputation all by yourself. So that's Hegseth responding to his own incompetence coming out publicly. You know, when you're a White House cabinet official responsible for a, like, what is it, $2 trillion, 4 million employee department called the Department of Defense? Yes. That's Pete Hegseth's response. Those damn disgruntled employees and the media, blah. So they accidentally send the threat letter to Harvard. Harvard responds and is like, no, we're not going to do any of that. We'll see in court. Thank you. And here is the administration's response to the reporting about the fact that they sent the threat letter to Harvard in an error. See if you see a similarity here, folks. It was malpractice on the side of Harvard's lawyers not to pick up the phone and call the members of the anti-Semitism task force who they had been talking to for weeks. Instead, Harvard went on a victimhood campaign. These two things are exactly like the other one. Pete Hegseth is objectively incompetent. So what does he do? He blames others for his incompetence and then blames the media, paints himself as the victim of these things, but accuses them of the bad actions. You get it? These people on the anti-Semitism task force, which isn't about anti-Semitism, it's about suppressing speech. It is cancel culture. It is the antithesis of free thinking, free speaking Americans and the independence of every private institution in the world, or at least here in the United States. Do you think the government should be able to tell your church what gets said from the pulpit on Sunday? Because that's what this is about, as they try to tell private universities how to teach, how to recruit, how to compensate faculty. And the response there is to call Harvard that they're some sort of false victimhood campaign, and it's their fault we're incompetent. Always somebody else's fault for the Trump administration's incompetence. Always. Of course, that's nonsense. Harvard said this in response to the White House's claim that it was somehow Harvard's fault that the White House screwed up and sent a threatening letter to Harvard. Somehow their fault. Harvard said this. The letter was signed by three federal officials, placed on official letterhead, and was sent from the email inbox of a senior federal official and was sent on April 11th as promised. The anti-Semitism task force said, we're going to send you a letter with our demands on April 11th. And then they sent a letter with their demands on April 11th, and somehow it's the Harvard administration's fault for figuring out that the letter was a mistake? For not figuring? Recipients of such correspondence from the U.S. government, even when it contains sweeping demands that are astonishing in their overreach, do not question its authenticity or seriousness. Are you frigging kidding? What the frickin' frack? Does this remind you of anything else? Oh, I'm sorry. We mistakenly deported a man in violation of his due process rights and a federal immigration judge order that said he should never be deported. But screw that guy. It's his fault because he's bad. Anybody picking up on a theme here? I'd like to know, what is the Trump administration actually responsible for? Would they ever stand up and say something doesn't go right? There's an error, mistake happens. Is there any evidence of anyone that works for Donald Trump standing up and saying, yep, we screwed that up. Our bad. We'll fix that right away. I'm sorry. We're sorry. And if you worked in a company where none of your coworkers and nor your boss nor anybody in leadership would ever accept an ounce of responsibility for anything, would gaslight the hell out of you when their mistake made your work harder, is that a place you'd want to work? I mean, heck no. So yes, Harvard, Pete Hegseth, immigration issues, it's all the same stuff. The Trump administration screws up royally, then blames everybody else and calls you a bad person when you ask about their mistakes. That's the pattern here. Cam from Appleton, thanks so much for your patience, my friend. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing all right. Good show today. I really like that you were able to cover the Pete Hegseth junk. If people want to act like this isn't such a big deal, or, well, signal's encrypted. One, for years now, AI has been getting studied to read encrypted traffic without decrypting it and being able to modify it while it's encrypted. That's not a joke. That is some serious problems and serious ramifications for quite literally every piece of security we use today. Two, I think people need a reminder of a really specific event. In 2016, a Russian journalist that was a military reporter in Syria was taking information from 4chan to bomb specific places in Syria, and they were just using Google Maps to figure out the specific places. If any of that information leaked to morons on a site like that or just anywhere, yeah, not great.
100%. Thanks so much for the call, Cam. Thanks to each and every one of you for sticking with me through my Hegseth and Harvard what do they have to do with one another discussion. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the passing of Pope Francis, as well as what his final words to the world on Easter Sunday mean for Christians and Catholics who support Donald Trump. When we come back here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just a reminder that coming Wednesday, you'll no longer find me from 2 to 4, but from 4 to 6 p.m. in a new drive time slot. And don't worry if your radio gets a little spotty driving in and out of Civic Media radio coverage. Just download the Civic Media app. You can always catch me crystal clear. I like to pick WAUK 540 AM as my home station. That's where I broadcast out of, coming to each and every one of you every weekday. What has been 2 to 4 will now be 4 to 6. Come with me for this new drive time experience. I want to talk about the passing of Pope Francis. It is worthy of note that the Pope passed away. I'm not sure if it was actually on Easter Sunday or early this morning. I believe it was on Easter. And he passes away after he has addressed his congregation for the last time, his congregation being the 8+ billion Catholics in the world, in his Easter address. He spoke very briefly yesterday to about 35,000 people standing in St. Peter's Square. And then Archbishop Diego Ravelli, whose formal title is the Master of Apostolic Ceremonies, read aloud Francis's Easter speech. This Easter speech is called, in Latin, Urbi et Orbi, which means to the city and the world. This speech could not have been any more of a direct repudiation of basically all of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and the MAGA versus worldview. Here was what the Pope said on the day that he died to his congregation, the world, to J.D. Vance specifically, who converted to Catholicism some 6 years ago, who met with the Pope on the day that he died. Here's what the Pope said to the world, to J.D. Vance, to Donald Trump. How much contempt is stirred up at times towards the vulnerable, the marginalized, and migrants. I appeal to all those in positions of political responsibility in our world not to yield to the logic of fear, which only leads to isolation from others, but rather to use the resources available to help the needy, to fight hunger, and to encourage initiatives that promote development. These are the weapons of peace, weapons that build the future instead of sowing the seeds of death. Excuse me, total population of Catholics, 1.4 billion. I don't know where I got eight. Stop texting me. I got the number wrong. 1.4 billion Catholics. This comes in the wake of other repudiations of the Trump administration and the MAGAverse from the U.S. Conference of Bishops addressing immigration. This was one of the organizing principles of Pope Francis. He himself was an immigrant, his family coming from Italy to Venezuela to escape fascism in Italy. Just this weekend, the National Catholic Reporter described a tweet from the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See, to the papacy, to the Vatican, as tone deaf. On Thursday, the Reverend Avilio Mejiva Aea, the auxiliary bishop of Washington, penned an op-ed condemning the administration's shock and awe campaign against migrants and urging the faithful to speak up against it. We cannot let the dark side of anti-immigrant animus take hold. I thought it might be good to remind us ourselves of what Bishop Marianne Buddy said to Donald Trump on the day after his inauguration. Let's take a listen.
May God grant us the strength and courage to honor the dignity of every human being, to speak the truth to one another in love, and walk humbly with each other and our God for the good of all people in this nation and the world. Amen.
Yeah. So, kind of important, but not something Donald Trump is familiar with. And I will always struggle to understand how someone with such support from evangelical Christians can be so demonstrably unchristian in his words and acts on a daily basis. What is Easter about? Easter is about forgiveness. That Jesus Christ, according to the Bible, died for the sins of humanity so that we may be forgiven by God and resurrected. And yet, our leader, Donald Trump, when asked about what he has asked for forgiveness from God regarding, said this.
But have you ever asked God for forgiveness? I'm not sure I have. I just go and try and do a better job from there. I don't think so. I think if I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture. I don't.
A man who has never asked God for forgiveness is no Christian. But to put the plight of immigrants, what's happened with Harvard, what happens with Pete Hegseth together of a whole, you do something wrong, don't say you're sorry. Just blame other people. I don't know. Was that in some book of the Bible that I missed during catechism? Weird. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. I'll be back with you tomorrow, my normal slot, 2 to 4. But set your calendars. Wednesday, you'll hear me during the drive time slot at 4 o'clock. We got a special live episode of Dan Schaefer coming up next, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.